everybody, and welcome to the Academy Awards edition of the Sal and Bob Show. Across from me, two very esteemed comics, the partner that I've grown to love here while doing our 66th episode, Mr. Sal D'Amelio. How are you?
Doing good, Bob. Good to be here with you and talk some Oscar talk.
And to your left, the estimable Metro Times film critic, Mr. Corey Hall. How are you, Corey? Oh, thanks
estimable.
For joining us.
All Corey's right. in cool. the house.
Yeah, thank you. I always like when you describe things on the radio, like, you know, to the left of me. You know, it's like, wasn't that on What's My Line? They'd be like,
probably.
To my left, it's a young lady that's really energizing the world.
Yeah, it's like with
Jack her incredible
Buck.
Charm and wit. She has the gossamer touch of an angel.
Gossamer.
Yes. Arlene Francis.
So it's a big episode for us. We did this last year, and we had a lot of fun. We got the Oscars coming up, and this airs Monday, so it's sort of it's the post-Oscar show for the listeners, but it's the pre-Oscar show for us, because we're doing this on a Saturday at October Park Studios.
You know what? Doesn't matter, because we're good. We picked the Super Bowl winner. We all said
right.
that Kansas City was going to win.
Did.
We did that the day before the Super Bowl, and we looked like geniuses on Monday.
I won $500 bucks on that, buddy.
So same thing's going to happen on this. Corey's going to pick all the Oscar winners. So it's
this
a
gonna
deal.
Be, this is going to be a good episode.
This will age well.
Yeah, like The Shape of Water. Everybody sit down on that. I can't believe we voted that.
This suspect. Episode has the shelf life of dollar store sushi. you want to consume this one quickly.
And consume it they do, by the way, because we are now up to 30,000 discrete listeners.
Nice.
Wow.
Nice.
Yep, 30,000 downloads. Very happy about that.
I don't think your listeners are discreet, but...
No, they're not. we don't want them to be. Yeah. But it's we're very happy to say that we just hit the 30,000 mark the other day.
Nice, man.
We're so social, aren't we, Sal?
We are very social. We
look
have coffee
social
cups.
We are. We have guests in the studio. We have Corey.
Guests in the studio. Yeah. We have an extra. We purchased or somehow got an extra mic. I don't know how Nate did this, but we got another mic.
Our
now.
Wonderful producer Nate Armbruster.
Yeah, yeah. We're highlighting our steakhouse.
Yeah, let's talk
today's
about that.
Down the street from the Dolby Theater where the Oscars are held, Musso and Frank. Grill, the grill at Musso and Frank. It's been around for literally 100 years,
1919.
Which is kind of ironic because 1917 is a movie that's in the Oscars. So 2 years later, Musso and Frank.
By the
came
way,
to
you
be.
Know, this is a sequel to 1917 coming out next
yeah,
spring.
What is it?
It's 1918.
Is
what it is. Oh my
be,
God,
it's
I can't
prequel.
Believe this.
Oh, wait, that's 1916.
Well, 1916 will be the prequel.
They're going
to
take
off
this
to
baby
a roaring
up to
start
1925
here.
And have 10 movies.
That's when I started in show business. 1917 was a great year. I played all the rooms on the Keith Circuit in vaudeville.
Well, Sally, we interrupted you. Go ahead.
No. Just wanted, it's a shout out to Musso and Frank's Grill. They're in L.A. They've been around for 100 years. Just go to their website and just look at the history of this place. I mean, everybody from the 19th, any Hollywood elite from the 1930s up till today have a stake in there. Corey even mentioned that it's in the movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
I never noticed that. What's the scene?
It's the scene where they meet with Al Pacino.
Oh, okay.
And they're in there drinking and everybody flipped out and went, oh, wow, look what Quentin did to recreate Hollywood. And he did do some incredible stuff. None of it's CGI. They put up all these signs on Hollywood Boulevard. They got to shut off like blocks of it at a time.
Yeah.
You couldn't really do it on Sunset, but on Hollywood Boulevard, the architecture still looks like it did for the most part. But Musso and Frank's, they didn't have to do anything because the thing looks like it did in 1935.
It's like awesome. The Golden Steer, our place in
correct.
Vegas.
Yeah. Okay. And it's an old school with the cart that comes around with the stuff on it and the waiters
and
there a thousand that's, years
and tableside Chateaubriand that kind of thing.
It's definitely a cool the chopped salad and the whole thing.
Nice.
A cool place to go in Hollywood, and there's another place up the street from there called Pig and Whistle, which are both like intact, you know. They're like Fatty Arbuckle grabbed a girl's boob in this, you know. Right, so
Fatty Arbuckle.
Yeah,
the 0.0003% of our listeners.
I like to cast a wide net. I like to really reach out to the listener and embrace them.
Yeah, wasn't his career ruined because he was having sex with a 13-year-old or something?
Tragically, Fatty Arbuckle had a party, and he was either at a party. I think it was at his house. He threw a party. He was a huge, massive silent movie star. Literally, I mean, he's a big fat guy, and was a big fat comedian, and this jolly, lovable, like the Chris Farley of his era.
Fatty.
Yes. Yes. Well, I think when we just call people, you know, that you're just insulting nicknames could be your
fatty
show business moniker,
Fats,
you know.
Domino.
Yeah. Do you remember Runty McNichols? He was a big star. And, you know, Hammer Toe Mulligan. It was a, but Fatty Arbuckle, had a party, and a young lady, basically, I think she had a hemorrhage from, OD Virginia, what was her name? Anyway, but rumors and stories got out. She basically drank too much and mixed pills or whatever.
Okay,
and died at his party. And then Virginia Rapp was her name. And
that's a hell of a mind you got there.
I know.
That's a wrap on that.
And RAPPE. But she was a young actress. But the rumors got out of control, and they put her in a bathtub to try and cool her down, you know, when she was having a seizure.
Uh-huh.
And basically the rumor circulated that he, you know, molested her with a Coke bottle and caused internal bleeding.
Was any of that
true? None of it was true.
No, it was none.
Was true. And they dragged him through the mud for years.
Oh, really?
Fake news.
Yeah, exactly. And multiple lawsuits were brought, and he sat in court for years, and it just killed his career. And all right, way to start the show off bummer.
One thing I wanted to say, you know me, with when it comes to food, this is what I love about this place, talking about Musso and Frank's here. The original chef was there for 53 years. He passed on his torch to a generation that have kept the dream alive, first by Carissimi's son, Charles, and then his wife, Edith, and then Musso's daughter, Rose, and then by Musso's granddaughters. Today, Musso's is owned and operated by John Musso's three granddaughters and their children. So this thing has stayed in the Carissimi's and Musso's family for decades and decades. So you're going in here, you're getting the same kind of service you got 70 years ago, you know,
tradition,
and you can get old timey, you can get old timey menu items like lobster thermidor.
Oh, nice.
Welsh rare bit. And
really?
Yeah. Yeah. Chicken pot pie on Thursdays.
Oh man.
So it's crazy. Yeah. It's a cool place. I've been there, and it's
scripts have been
so it's
out.
More like the Golden Steer even than I was thinking. Cause that's they've got the original menu they had since 1958 or something.
You got to believe great scripts have been handed over on the table, like Little Nicky and all these great movie scripts. Yeah.
Little Nicky.
How about Mac and Me?
You know, it was at that table where the idea for Alvin and the Chipmunks 2, the Squeakquel, was conceived, right there at Musso and Frank's.
Oh, yeah. Legendary. Legendary entertainments.
So, yeah.
By the way, I hate it when somebody refers to something as an entertainment. Mm. You ever hear these people? It's an entertainment. What are you talking about?
An entertainment?
Yeah. You know, they refer to a film, you know, as an entertainment. Oh, f*** off. I don't want to hear you anymore.
Well, it's the word and. If you say this movie is light entertainment, whatever, that's fine. But you put an.
Exactly.
It's very annoying. Yeah.
We wanted to talk a little bit about some of what some websites refer to as the least deserving Oscar winners.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Now everybody's got their opinions. There's nothing more subjective than movies. You know, why they're good, what makes them good, are they good at all? I mean, everybody has an opinion on movies. And this particular site, it's called The Insider. They say 22 people in movies that completely don't deserve their Oscar wins. Now, right off the bat, they mention Rocky.
I don't even see that list. I'm just crossing that list off to put that movie on there. Come on, it was a great movie.
Well, it's one of the best movies. It really was. And not just because we're a couple of mooks and we love that. But I checked other sites and it showed up multiple times
really?
On some people. I don't get it either. And you got, here's one, Crash.
Yeah.
What do you think about that one?
That didn't age real well.
I just saw it like a year ago, and I liked it.
See that some of these movies don't. They have like they have a short shelf life. They don't. They at the moment people were like, "Wow, what a profound statement about race and America." Mm. And then a couple years later, people go, "What a bunch of malarkey that was."
It had Matt Dillon and Tandy Newton.
Yeah, people turned on that one immediately. That one was very much like, I got something important to say.
Yeah.
And just was real ham-fisted, I think.
Okay. But
I was not a big fan of Crash.
Okay. I did get the ham fistery when I watched it recently. I felt fisted.
That's another great Hollywood. That's a gay bar, though.
Ham fistery.
But it's been there since 1941, the ham fistery. Be careful if you go in there. That's in West Hollywood.
What do you think about this one? Gary Oldman's Oscar for Darkest Hour, Winston Churchill.
Yeah, some people, I liked that, but some people thought it was a little cartoonish and a little. I mean, it's Winston Churchill. I mean, that was very much a like, let's put on the fat suit and mumble and smoke cigars. I liked that. I actually liked that film more than a lot of people did. I think people, I don't know what they were expecting. And then, of course, you got Woke Nation that's like, well, Winston Churchill was a racist. I'm like, well, yeah, he was a colonial British soldier.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, they were all about going to Africa and stomping on people.
Uh-huh.
But he was, that was, that, you know, he believed in the empire.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he didn't have your 2020 values.
He saved the empire.
Yes. You can't say his this is again historical second guessing where people go, but actually he didn't grow Skittles in his yard. I mean, you know,
who does? Who can afford that?
I don't
these
know.
Days?
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? There's just I think that was a little bit of that backlash.
Okay.
I like that performance. I
liked it too, and I thought
that was the movie Crash won it, right? It won.
Yeah, it was a best picture winner. I don't know when it was, 15 years ago or something.
Okay,
like that.
Now just to stay on that subject, because I found a site where it says the Oscar winner, and then it says what movie should have won that year.
Oh, okay.
So the year that Crash won it,
we could have coordinated this like a professional podcast.
Brokeback Mountain should have won that year. Mm. Is that true?
The Ang Lee opus to Gay Cowboys.
Yeah. So they're saying that should have won.
It was a good movie. I enjoyed it, but.
That's their pick of what they think.
That's kind of a weak year when those two are the front runners.
I mean, the most notorious, infamous miss, is what movie won in 1941? What was the best picture? No, what was the year? The year 1941.
Angels with Dirty Faces. I don't know.
It was How Green Was My Valley by John Ford, about a Welsh coal mining town.
Really?
And it beat out a little film called Citizen Kane. That's maybe the most notorious. Like, we got it wrong.
Now was that Hearst getting back?
How Green Was My Valley.
Yes,
Orson Welles.
Orson won. He won Best Original Screenplay, which actually he had a split with Mankiewicz, Herman Mankiewicz. But he actually Orson took all the credit. But anyway, that's the most infamous kind of.
Well, you know what? You're exactly right. On this list that I found, it was actually number two.
Yeah.
So the number one snub or whatever is Shakespeare in Love.
Oh yeah.
To Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, I remember that now.
That's right. Number
little
one and number
piece
two,
of cotton candy nonsense wins over. Saving Private
that
Ryan.
That movie was awesome, Saving Private Ryan.
It holds up today. I saw it about 6 months ago.
No one has watched Shakespeare in Love since then.
Exactly.
I mean, that's kind
of... That was a Weinstein
shoving
up the Academy's...
Woo-hoo. Exactly. I feel like you got to weigh these things historically. At least I try to as a critic. I try to look at things and I go, some movies are just going to be here for 2 weeks and then we'll never think about them again. And some will last and be the test of time and get better with age.
Sure.
And, I think like one of my favorite movies the last 25 years is The Truman Show, which I think gets richer and deeper all the time. And when it came out, people were like, it's a little weird. But I think that movie, and particularly with social media and the whole way everybody's life is online all the time and we're making a spectacle of ourselves, that's become an incredibly rich movie the further we get away from it. And sometimes like crash.
Good point.
You're over. It's over and gone in a minute.
Yeah.
I don't. Is any? Yeah. Is any? Is a single solitary soul watched Moonlight since
no
the week after it won the Oscar?
Yeah.
And no one's gonna go back and watch that.
Or it's a Roma. Are we having Roma parties?
Both of those are just turgid slogs.
Yeah.
And you know, the all time worst, apparently, the one that everybody says the greatest show on earth.
Oh,
was the all time worst Best Picture winner.
It's on this list.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which, you know, they say it's 2.5 hours of a circus.
Yeah.
And that was the
so
the
you mean it, you mean it's like. To mean it's like the debates. We do hacky.
Oh, those are four and a half hours.
Let me,
well, let me ask you what you think of this. Okay, Sal and I were talking about this before we started recording this this ode to Hollywood. Birdman.
Oh yeah,
the best picture. When was that? Like 5 years? 2014.
Hasn't worn it, real well.
It's so actorly.
Yeah,
about
it is.
Actors.
Well, you know, Hollywood loves to reward, and we'll see that with this year's nominations when we get to them. Hollywood loves movies about Hollywood and movies about actors.
Yes.
You can never go broke betting on those kind of movies.
There you go.
In which good it's call. Like, it's an expose of Hollywood.
Yeah.
You know, much like comics like to watch, you know, other comics yell at each other. You know what
except
I mean?
Except
like,
there's never been a good movie about stand-up comedy.
We've talked about that before. Never.
They tried and failed.
Mike Birbiglia's movie came pretty close.
Sleepwalk With Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that was autobiographical.
That felt pretty accurate. The comedy portions of it felt pretty accurate.
Yeah. Okay. You know what? You're right about that, looking back.
No, not a lot of great stand-up. No. And it's because they always get an actor who's not a comic. Instead of getting a comic to act... Which is what they, you know, Mark Maron or somebody could do a comedy movie.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because then you get an actor.
He brings angst with him wherever he goes.
I'm just an example of a comic who's an actor.
Yeah.
They should do it the other way. They always do it the other way. They always go, let's get Tom Hanks to do stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Or
let's get De Niro.
I love that movie. That's one of my top five.
You know,
King of Comedy is a top five.
Right. But the comedy isn't really
particularly. It's not about stand-up comedy.
The stand-up's not very convincing in that. No.
Well, no, because it's him doing it.
But even, Jerry is terrible as a talk show host.
Yeah, he's, and Jerry Lewis basically played himself. Just
there's another nightmare. I'm going to go down another rabbit hole. Jerry Lewis, talk show host.
Yeah.
He had, okay, they gave him a couple tries to be a talk show host. In the 50s, he guest hosted, I think when Steve Allen left, he guest hosted on the Tonight Show in between Steve Allen and Jack Parr. I'm getting the younger, this is for the Xennials. This shit's going to blow up on TikTok, all right? I'm going to put all of this material about Jack Benny, between Steve Allen left to go do his own show on CBS.
What about your Peter Lawford bit?
Anyway, Jerry Lewis guest hosted the Tonight Show before they got Jack Parr, and he was a big hit. So ABC said, we want some of that, built him a theater. It had a giant-
Never knew that.
Gold sign that was the Jerry Lewis Theater.
Really?
They had that like cartoon portrait of Jerry Lewis that, you know, you remember?
Yeah, yeah.
Was etched on the wall and like giant thing.
They spent
$3 million in 50s money on building this, you know, studio.
Wow.
It bombed in 12 weeks, and it was a massive bomb.
Worse than Chevy Chase's.
Oh, yeah. And then they tried again in the 80s. They tried to put Jerry Lewis on.
I don't remember that.
And that only lasted like 10 weeks or 10 episodes or something. It was a disaster. He had Charlie Callis as his second banana.
No!
And it was the worst thing. I'm going to show you the clips of this, and you're going
to...
I
have to see that.
It will blow your mind.
The cheese factor of that.
Charlie Callis was the worst. All right. We're way off on that. I'm sorry, guys.
So the two of them hit Charlie Callis is going, and he's going, lady. Oh, God.
It's a spasm of hideousness. It's really bad. It's just... Oh, let me tell you. It's just you're like you
need a Charles Nelson Reilly.
Oh God, it's so bad.
Oh, and Paul Lynde would.
I would have watched his talk show. All right, coming up, our next guest.
Well,
this old bag.
We came to you today, people, to talk to you about the Oscars.
Sorry,
2020.
Sorry, excuse me. Let me be serious.
We're all over the place. So let's get ourselves out of the negative mindset of films and people.
No, I got more to rip on.
All right, let's go. I know, we could do this all day. Yeah. But let's talk about the ones that are up for the Oscar now. So what do you got?
All right, so you want to save Best Picture for last. We'll do that last.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's start with sound editing. All right.
Let's not.
What? Why?
Makeup and animation. Makeup and animation.
Yeah, the worst two categories are sound editing and sound mixing.
All right, how about...
I have to explain every single year. This is the worst part about being a film critic. Being a film critic, let's be honest, is a pretty good gig most of the time. And, you know, once in a while, you got to sit through a Kevin James movie and take your... You got to go watch a, you know, a J-Lo romantic
Mall
comedy.
Cop 3.
Right. You know, I got to take your hits. But all in all, watching movies and getting paid for it's a pretty good gig. But the Oscars is a slog every year.
Yeah.
And just being asked about it, and people have asked me every year for the last two decades, what is sound editing and sound mixing? And there's a category for both of them, and they bring it on the Oscars every year, and no one ever understands. One is the actual... Okay, so sound editing is the sound that is recorded while you're making the film, and sound mixing is the final production of everything together.
So the sound editing guy just takes the farts out if Brad Pitt farts on scene.
Exactly.
And then the mixer guy.
Yeah, and the mixer puts the music in and the sound effects and all
that. With the farts.
But anyway.
The final farts.
Yes. Apparently. There were farts all over.
We respect everybody in the movie industry. That's why they don't even have them go up to get the Oscar. They just list it before the commercial. Just to let you know, earlier, Mark Price won for sound editing in Little Women.
Mark Price.
Or whatever. You know.
These are always the guys. They're in ill-fitting tuxes, and their wives are like 300 pounds, you know, with the horn-rimmed glasses. I feel so bad for them. They don't even let them on the show.
Well, it's always like the third banana from the Big Bang Theory had to host that thing.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, Melissa Rauch from the Big Bang Theory. You know what I mean? Right? It's always like some third, you know, it's like...
Sometimes.
Ben Vereen hosted an event 3 weeks ago. At 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, the only people remember Ben Vereen is they still call him Chicken George. That's a 70s reference, people.
Oh, my God.
Oh, we're going back to our roots here on the Salmon Bob Show with our guest, Corey Hall. All right.
So let's look
Gabe Kaplan hosted an event earlier.
Battle of the Network Stars. Oh, that's a... We can do a whole...
I'm going to do 2 hours.
At the Oscars... luncheon earlier today.
Well, 2 hour special of the Sal and Bob Show about Gabe Kaplan versus Bob Conrad foot race. Did you ever see that one?
Yes, I did.
So that's
I'm ashamed to say it's
the greatest thing on this battle. Nate's looking at us like, what are you old bastards talking about? Battle of the Network Stars. Forget the Oscars. I'm talking about Battle of the Network Stars. This was the best show because it was ABC, NBC, CBS when that's all you had. PBS didn't mount a team. There was not like Julia Child wasn't out there competing.
They were doing Lilius yoga.
Going around the tracks are the actors from Chips are both circling the track right now.
SCTV actually did that bit. They was Battle of the PBS Stars. And it was like Mr. Rogers and Carl Sagan boxing and stuff.
Oh, that is fantastic. Yeah. I never saw that.
Anyway. Funny, Battle of the Network Stars was so, because like literally they won, the winning team won like 200 grand or something.
Yeah.
And in the 70s, that was like real money.
Yeah, that's a million.
And so
bucks
they really were competing to like split this pot of money.
Yeah.
And or they all got 30K or some nonsense.
Well, they were like, all out of work, you know.
Yeah.
Robert Conrad.
Right. You know, and Randolph Mantooth needed that money, you know, so he was really busting his ass in that canoe. And there's my two favorite moments. I'm going to get off this in 1 minute, but my two favorite moments in Battle of the Network Stars history are Robert Conrad gets, they were mad about a relay race handoff and they were like, this is wrong. NBC got jobbed. Telly Savalas was the coach of the CBS team. Yeah. He was the captain of the CBS team and he was.
Was he smoking when they ran?
Oh, yeah. Guys, yeah. There's an athletic competition where they're like, hold on. Somebody want to top off my wild turkey? Look, but so Robert Conrad, who is this hard ass, always had this like burr up his ass all the time. You know, hey, you want to knock this battery off my shoulder, punk? You know, and he was the star of Wild Wild
West.
Don't
piss me off. I'll kill my wife.
Yeah, exactly.
What?
He did this in the 70s. He'd wear a tank top, had a 9-volt battery on his shoulder, and had this commercial like, come on, Try me, punk.
Yeah.
And anyway, he wanted a redo. So they said, we're going to have a 100-yard dash with you and Gabe Kaplan, who was the captain of the ABC team.
Yeah, Mr. Cotter.
Kaplan blew his fucking doors off. He really... Here's Conrad, this looks like a lightweight boxer, you know, he's like this ripped steely dude, you know, and Kaplan just blew him off the sticks. And it was
and the
crazy.
Sweat Hogs were waiting for
and
him
then
at the finish
the
line.
The second best one,
Bob Marino, Horseshack, they're all waiting at the finish line.
What was the wife, Marcia? What's her name?
Yes, Marcia. Oh, yeah, I can't remember.
Not Marcia Mason,
name.
But anyway, and the other best one is, and look these up on YouTube. Is they had a tug of war, and Mr. T was the captain. Mr. T was the captain for NBC, and everybody was like, oh, forget it. It's all over. Mr. T can, like, lift a VW bus and throw it over his head. He's superhuman. Yeah. And Tom Wopat was the captain of the other team. And, like, Mr. T is literally praying. He's on his knees doing, like, prayer.
Yeah.
And, like, Howard Cosell's like, you've got to admire the man's determination. He's a man of faith, and he's invoking a higher power to win this... And then Wopat uses hillbilly strength and just digs in and whips his ass. Thank you. All right, back to the show.
Did they hook it up?
Pete's gonna cut all this out.
General Lee.
Oh, and he backed up the general.
Oh, great memories.
All right, good time.
Oh, so cheesy.
God, that's funny.
So let's okay. So we're back.
Charlene
now,
Tilton's
so.
In the dunk tank. All right.
All right. So
back to the program.
Why don't we go? I mean, we're not gonna go over every one of these. So let's go.
An inordinate amount of time has been given to sound editing and sound whatever.
How about directing? Let's take a look at directing. Right. You got The Irishman, Martin Scorsese, Todd Phillips, The Joker, Sam Mendes, 1917, Quentin Tarantino, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Parasite, Bong Joon-ho.
Okay, let's just right now, let's throw Bong Joon-ho. He's done. Because most people in Hollywood will never be able to pronounce that name. Yeah. So we really have just a few competing for this. What's your opinion, Corey? Who's going to win?
I feel like sometimes, and Parasite's a great movie, and it deserves all the nominations, but I think you're right in that sometimes people just vote for what they think the best speech is going to be.
Oh, really? Okay.
And nobody wants to hear Bong Joon-ho go up there and you know... this movie was great for me, or whatever, you know, or be translated.
Yeah.
You know,
where is he from? Because
South Korea.
Oh, okay.
And so, the North Korean best picture was just footage of some dear leader riding a horse up a mountain for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Just...
yeah. 28 days after the gulag.
Well, according to the odds makers, Bong Joon-ho has a good shot here. He is in second.
Okay, now what do they have? Sam
+450.
Is Sam Mendes number one
international or for best director?
This is best director.
Okay,
I think
Sam Mendes is -1,000.
I think Sam Mendes will win it because one. Okay, did you guys see 1917?
Yes.
No, I didn't see it.
All right, it's a director movie in that it's really about the camera movement, the placement. Roger Deakins is the cinematographer who's like the Coen brothers' favorite cinematographer. Roger Deakins has a list that's just incredible. If you go on IMDb, he's shot every amazing movie. But the cinematography is exceptional in 1917, and they do this gimmick where it all looks like it's one shot. It's not. Yeah. There's a couple blackouts, and there's parts where they, you know, can cut and edit, but... It all of it is this like project. You're like basically launched through a tunnel, and you're just following these guys on this mission.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I felt like that.
And the whole it gives the whole movie this dramatic energy that you're just following these guys.
There's
on
no
this
let
path.
Up.
No, and it's just like you're on this road, you know. And from the minute they say, you know, here's your orders, you got to go, give this message to the general before they get wiped out. You're just following these guys, and it's an incredible directing work. The fact that, and by the way, not CGI. I mean, there might be some CGI enhancement in the background on some stuff, but when there's a battle scene, when they're running out of the trenches, that is hundreds of extras running out of the trenches and explosions going off.
Wow,
and they mounted this massive scale thing. So I think from that perspective, he could win. The other factor would be, would they go sentimentally, give it to Scorsese? because he's old.
No, I hope he's they got don't
a plus
do that.
7,000, so okay. It's probably not going to be.
No, right. I think it was. I love that movie. We talked about right. that earlier, but so yeah,
looks
1970.
Like Sam Mendes is going to
and Tarantino
in the prequel.
Tarantino is still next week. Kind of a yeah.
1916. I just had to get that. That's so awful.
Okay, let's take a look at. We're not going to go cinematography. We're not doing that.
Roger Deakins should win that. That's
okay.
Okay, how about actress in a supporting role?
All right.
Kathy Bates.
Yeah.
For Richard Jewell.
Oh, she was now, good that, in that, man.
Sal's always working the vig on these things.
Laura Dern.
It's always working the
Marriage
eyes.
Story.
Yeah.
Scarlett Johansson. Yeah. Jojo Rabbit. Florence Pugh, Little Women, or Margaret Robbie in Bombshell?
I think that Laura Dern's got the inside Seems track like on this. But, I mean, you know, Kathy Bates is also Kathy Bates, and mm-hmm. so that's a safe pick, and people go, everybody loves her. And I don't think that movie, though, that Richard Jewell was pretty controversial in terms of...
It was, but I liked it.
I don't think that the movie deserved all the controversy about it. Mm. I thought the movie itself was pretty classic storytelling.
Well, the controversy was all about whether the reporter
yes.
That was played by Olivia
Wilde,
yeah. actually slept with the dude from the FBI to get information.
They kind of made up some aspects of that. And
yeah.
And well, that got it. Well, yeah. But the problem that movie ran into is, again, it had a negative view of the press.
Yes,
and
I sure
that's
did.
One thing journalists are not going to do.
Yeah, don't piss
say,
off the press.
Hey, this is about how corrupt the papers were, and that's the story of Richard Jewell is about uh-huh. how the news media
yeah.
made this guy's life a hell, and how the cops and the FBI rushed to get a suspect.
Yeah, that's all it's about.
And wow. and so since Clint is conservative, a lot of the press who is not. Knee-jerk reacted in a way. Now, all of that's in there. I mean, Clint's politics are in his movies. For the last, 10 years, he's been making these movies about Sully, and he did American Sniper, and
The Mule, which I love.
The Mule. And it's all this, blue-collar heroes has been his recurring theme. He's making docudramas about...
As if he was
first
ever a
responder.
Blue-collar hero.
He was in the army.
Well, I know, but I
but,
mean,
yeah,
he's
no.
always, I mean, he's been a famous, right. well-paid actor
Since
for 50 years. Yeah.
Well, Laura Dern is favored by minus 1,500, so she's probably she's got
it. It seemed, and Laura Dern is Hollywood royalty, and, you know, yeah. everybody likes her. And she's great in that movie as the pit bull lawyer. The lawyers are the best part of that movie.
Okay. I haven't seen the movie yet. Now, that's a Netflix movie.
It might
right?
be traumatic and triggering to you as a divorced man.
That's okay. It's been a while.
Yeah. It might hit. Our buddy. Anyway, Ted Moss did not like that movie because he was.
Is he recently divorced?
He's been through the divorce process, okay. and it was. I think yeah. it was like PTSD for him to watch.
Yeah.
But so I don't know. But
as I'm looking at. Actors in a supporting role, I'm going to make this comment right now, and I'm going to see if you agree with me. This is probably the most stacked nominees for supporting actor in a supporting role I think I've ever seen.
Yeah?
Here are the names.
Well,
Tom Hanks
mm-hmm.
in A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. You got Anthony Hopkins, the two popes.
Wow.
You got Al Pacino in The Irishman. You got Joe Pesci in The Irishman, and you have Brad Pitt Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. That's your five.
Yeah, that's stacked.
Where
that
has
stacked.
That ever been?
Yeah.
Well, seriously, where... Yeah. What
it's
year?
Pretty. It's. I'm sure you could go back to some Jesus. Year where it was like George C. Scott, and you know.
Yeah.
But this is like
and Kirk yeah. Douglas.
Yeah,
who recently. Passed.
This is an incredible.
That's
lineup.
Yeah. That's a hell of a lineup. So what are you thinking, Sal? What's your pick on that?
Well, I didn't see every movie on here, but let me see what the numbers say. I'm a numbers guy. You know?
What do you think, Corey? Who would you pick?
Brad Pitt won the Golden Globe. Brad Pitt won the SAG Award.
Yeah, he's favored hugely.
He's Brad
here.
Pitt.
Okay, but do yep. you like his performance?
I didn't see it.
For?
I didn't see that one yet.
I think you know.
Wait, you haven't
I
seen
see Once Upon a Time. Once
well,
a,
yeah, no way, Sal.
I know,
really?
Idiot. I know. I'm stupid. I went and saw everything else except that.
You okay. must have had a lot of gigs, buddy. That's our movie.
Yeah, the one performance I really didn't like on that list is Pacino. I didn't like Pacino in The Irishman.
I didn't like him either.
Because he was trying to do a Midwest accent on top of being Al Pacino.
Yeah, no, it was terrible. He got a pretty good job in that, though. I mean, he wasn't.
I think Pesci was much better in that movie.
Yes, he played against type. He was restrained and quiet and still, he was still dangerous as he's played in most all of his roles, but he did it quietly. Well,
yeah.
So
he played the opposite of what he usually plays.
He was the slow burn guy.
He was good in that.
Yeah.
I thought Al Pacino was really good in that, though.
I liked the movie. I liked his character in it. But if you go, and I did this after the movie, he doesn't sound or act at all like Jimmy Hoffa. He's Al Pacino doing something that approximates Hoffa. But, you know.
Now,
I don't know.
I think I want to say everybody in that category has won an Oscar.
I would say they have, yeah.
So that's another factor is the Oscars kind of treat this thing, like I said on another interview I did this week, it is not always necessarily about the movie or the year that you're in.
Yeah.
It is kind of, they look at your career in a totality.
Yeah.
And they will look at a guy like Anthony Hopkins and go, yeah, he's Anthony Hopkins. He's cool.
Yeah.
He's gotten the award.
Hasn't won one, or he has gotten it before. Okay, all those guys have.
I mean, look, you'd be staggered by the guys who did. Okay, Kirk Douglas, who just passed away,
yeah,
never won an Oscar, was nominated 3 times.
Wow.
Okay.
He's one of the greatest stars in the history of Hollywood. Yeah. And he was a tremendous actor. I mean, legitimately, not just a matinee idol, but a great actor. Mm. He never won. Albert Finney was nominated 4 times and one of the greatest actors who ever lived.
Yeah.
And he never won.
Aaron Brockovich, he should have won for
absolutely
that. He was
give
so
it
good
to you
at
if
that
they won, is what you
exactly
saying.
I don't think Brad Pitt has won. So they will. There is every incentive for the Academy to say, Brad Pitt has never won an Oscar and he's one of our biggest stars.
Yeah.
And he's one of legitimately the biggest stars that remains in terms of drawing power and selling tickets. And Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was a Tarantino movie, but it sold, it did well because it had DiCaprio Brad Pitt as the selling point.
Star power, man.
Star power.
In that movie.
And Brad Pitt has star power and he glows like a golden god. Still,
I'll tell you about star power.
He's going
to
win.
He got me to see Ad Astra. Which I still regret. What the f*** was that? I'm sorry.
With the baboons and the whole thing?
Ugh.
That's a movie where you went, I bet there's a cut of this that works.
But it made 2001 look lucid.
No. There's literally like characters come into that movie and then like disappear and you never see them again.
Yeah, and Tommy Lee Jones. What was that about? I don't know that. Anyway,
but Brad Pitt, I think, is a lock.
Okay,
in that
category. He's a lock. Let's go.
Sal, go ahead.
The actress in a leading role.
Actress
in a leading role.
What do you got?
Cynthia Erivo from Harriet, Scarlett Johansson in Marriage Story. I hope I'm saying this is her name right. Saoirse Ronan or
Saoirse Ronan. No one can pronounce that name.
Saoirse, is that how you say it?
Saoirse. Yeah, she's from Ireland, and
she won.
Her name's Saoirse.
Didn't she?
Saoirse.
Didn't she win something last year?
She's been nominated. What did she win? Anyway,
Charlize Theron, Bombshell.
She's gonna win that.
And Renee Zellweger.
Oh no,
Judy.
That's right.
Yeah, she's got
Judy.
It.
The movie that nobody saw. Here we go again.
Yeah,
did $12 at the box office.
Minus $1,400 to win it. Scarlett Johansson is plus a $1,450.
Well,
so they've pretty much given it to Renee.
In a weird thing, Scarlett is nominated in both categories.
Jeez.
She's in Best Supporting and Best Actress. So that's going to split her vote.
Okay.
And I personally would pick Jojo Rabbit, I think, was her better
She was good at
work. I think that she was really... I really liked that movie. But
I did too.
I think a lot of people are going to go, it's a comedy about the Nazis. Maybe we should not...
Where do we put this thing?
I mean, they didn't make a Hogan's Heroes movie. Yeah. I mean, but...
Unless you count the one about Greg Kinnear starred as
Autofocus.
Yes. Oh, what a disturbing movie.
Quick side story on this, which will probably get cut. But
no, we don't cut anything.
At the screening of Auto,
it's got shit to do.
So the press screenings used to be always in the morning. Not as much anymore. They do more of them at night. But it used to be at like 11 a.m. And they still do some. But 11 a.m. would be the press screenings. There were more critics back then.
So you would go into a theater and watch this at 11 a.m.
There was a screening room
that
was a private screening room we used to have. And that went, anyway, but this was at the Palladium in Birmingham where we did a lot of screenings because Terry Lawson from the Free Press lived close to that. So that was literally, that's why it was
okay.
There. Terry was the big fish. And it was Drew and Mike came to that screening. And those guys would always, because they were on air until like 10, 15, would kind of roll in right at the start of it or maybe a couple minutes late. And they came in with the producers and the whole crew and, you know, Slappy and Frankie and all the guys. And they had their
Slappy and Frankie. Slappy.
Yeah,
and
you know what I mean? Like all the, all the
1970s yeah, ABC sitcom.
They're right. They're interns and stuff. This was before Eric Fady. Right. They brought in Gabe Kaplan came with them. But Horseshack.
And a sweat hog.
Yes, that's right. Juan Epstein was with them. Puerto Rican Jew. Good times. That's right.
Right. Juan Epstein. Yeah. Very funny.
But anyway, Mr. Carter, when's the movie starting? Anyway, we've lost anyone under 50 years old for this show. But anyway, so they come into autofocus and they're like, they got their nachos and all their stuff and they kind of can make it. And it's that movie is about Bob Crane.
Yeah.
Bob Crane was like kind of a freak.
Yeah. Filming and molesting.
The star of Hogan's Heroes was kind of a, you know, he'd like to pick up chicks and he did dinner theater and he'd go on the road and, you know, in Tulsa and you know, bang a bunch of stewardesses or whatever. And he had this guy that hung around him who was like getting the runoff from him.
Yeah.
And he was just like, you know, everything, anything that, but anything Bob Crane threw off his plate, this guy got picked up the scraps and he would film him anyway. So it was this weird sex thing where they're making sex tapes in the 70s on these big giant tapes, and Drew and Mike just could not get into it. And it was like they just kept going like, you know, Hogan, you know, and I know nothing. And then Terry Lawson, who is the Free Press film critic, was like, are you radio guys done, man? I'm trying to work here, shut up. And like just got up and cussed them out.
Wow. You radio guys.
Yeah. And are you radio clowns done? And they ripped him a new ass for like weeks on end on the radio.
Oh,
and
awesome.
I went, don't do that, Terry, because those guys are going to, they just was a running bit for
you. You get one article a week in print. These guys are on air every day.
He wasn't wrong. They were being loud, but like they just pommeled him for weeks on end. Anyway.
That's all right. So we got two more categories.
I've gone off on the deep end.
No, we got two more categories. We've encouraged. We'll do best picture here in a second. We're kind of trying to wind down here in a few. This next category is just, I'm just going to name the names of the people that are going to watch Phoenix go up on stage. Basically, Antonio Banderas is going to have to watch him. Leonardo DiCaprio is going to have to watch him. Adam Driver is going to have to watch him. And Jonathan Pryce is staying at home. He's not even coming.
He's not even making the flight.
But Phoenix is the overall favorite. I was telling Bob, I loved his performance, but I didn't really care for the movie. I didn't think the movie was that great.
I hated the movie, but I did I did like his performance.
Okay, so I got the same review as
I'm surprised. I told you, Sal, that I was surprised at that because that's kind of our kind of movie.
But obviously it had a little bit of stand-up in it because he wants to be a stand-up comic. Yeah. But
Gary Gulman, our friend Gary, was in that.
And Sam...
Yeah, he was.
And
he
Sam Morrill is... You hear him and he's on stage, but you don't really see him.
Okay.
Another good comic.
Yeah.
Gary was the guy in the nightclub that the Joker was in the back just laughing inappropriately while Gary was being, he was sort of playing a hack, you know, nightclub guy.
Yes.
He wasn't playing himself.
It's a great performance, but the movie itself, I think, was just gross and seedy. And
yeah, I didn't like it. It was okay. It was all right.
I didn't like the message of it. Really, frankly, I thought it was, you know.
So what do you think the message was?
The message is your negative feelings and your mental illness are legitimized by your violence.
Mm. Okay. So
he gets power.
It's okay that you become this lunatic. Because
you become, he's not a loser anymore. He's somebody.
Yeah.
And then crowds of people are wearing Joker masks and like, it really legitimizes his
That's
wicked.
Our reality right now. We got this orange a-hole in the White House, this thug, this moron. You know what I mean? That's
but
that
the
we're
problem.
Living
so
in
the,
this.
The movie fits the times, is what
well,
you're saying.
Yeah,
that movie
that's
comes
what
out
saying.
In 97,
I would
it's
much,
probably a bomb, right? Is that what you're
maybe,
saying?
Maybe.
20 years ago?
I think they took the goodwill people have towards the DC franchise. you know, people like those movies, or, you know, the Joker's a character that's popular, and then they just put their funky, nasty tricks into it. Anyway, I don't want to get off too bad on that movie, but okay. Joaquin Phoenix is amazing.
You're moralizing a little bit. You're surprising me.
I'm absolutely.
No. You give a very dispassionate view or opinion on things, but this is it struck you in a way that did it struck you in your feels negatively.
I had a horrible feeling coming. I sat there and it was depressing. It's a depressing movie.
It is depressing. It is depressing.
And but you know what? I feel like that's a cheap and easy solution to, you know what I mean? There wasn't balance in the movie. There was literally no characters that had any worth or redemption. And if you give me a story in which someone makes a choice between doing the right thing and doing the wrong thing, this guy had no opportunity to do the right thing. He was not rewarded in any way.
Well, you're right about that. There was no situation set up where he could have gone one way and went the other.
So they stacked the deck in favor of his evil.
Yes.
They said the world is bad and it's out to get you, which is, of course, I think, horseshit.
Yeah,
I think people make moral choices. I think Rush Limbaugh made a moral choice with what he said every day for 35 mm-hmm. years. And so when
now
people
he's
go,
a Medal of Freedom winner.
I know. But when people were, you know, thrilled with his work, and then they clutched their pearls and went, oh, but Rush is sick now. Oh, and I'm like, the guy went on the radio and said the worst stuff you could do and then played it like it was a gag. And the same with Joker.
Yeah.
The Joker is this movie that says it's okay. Basically, it's telling the juggalos they're right. That you can be this gothy, negative, hateful, spiteful loser.
All right.
And then you're going to be a star. You're worth something. That's why I didn't like that movie.
Okay. Yeah,
it's a great performance, though.
It's unbelievable.
His acting's
amazing.
Why
you didn't like it?
I didn't like it's a harsh word. I liked the movie. I don't think it should be. And again, I haven't seen every movie out, but I don't know. It's not going to win the Oscar.
As Best Picture.
Yeah.
Right, which is really weird.
But he's going to win Best Actor.
He's
going to
win Best Actor. So what happens there? What does that mean? He acted so well in a piece of work. He was amazing.
Is another example where it's the performance and the rest of the movie doesn't match it up.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that's a performance in search of a movie in Judy.
Renee Zellweger
basically just threw everything she had into it.
Yeah.
She sings. She really gets into the part. And she basically was pleading, please give me an Oscar. And I feel like they're going to give her an Oscar and say, welcome back, Renee. You used to be a star and now you're back. People make emotional choices in the movies.
My favorite scene in The Joker was I really enjoyed that scene when he kills the bigger clown guy and the other midget's got to walk out of the apartment or whatever and he just scares
I'm just gonna go
with...
now.
I love that scene. That
he
was
does
a great
well.
Scene.
Look, he let the midget live, so he must be a good guy.
I just love that scene.
Spoilers.
I don't care. So if I could make one last point here. The most successful R-rated movie of all time, The Joker, right? Okay, it's $1.2 billion or something like that worldwide.
It's insane.
Crazy numbers. So it's not going to win, but the core of it is going to win Best Actor. One of the least successful movies maybe of all time, Judy. Did you even see that?
I saw it.
Okay, you had to see that. Is going to win for its star, but... you're the only person I know who's seen that movie.
Yeah.
Did you like it?
No, I didn't like it. The movie wasn't great in terms of... it was depressing. Again, it's like the last days of Judy Garland.
Yeah, she's a drug addict.
But the performance is great.
Yeah.
It's Renee Zellweger really does... I personally would... I'd lean more towards Charlize Theron, who gives an amazing performance as Megyn Kelly, but I think then people are picking the fact that they don't like Megyn Kelly.
Yeah,
they don't like. Yeah, and it's Fox News, and it's all wrapped up in that liberal Hollywood thing.
People don't make objective decisions.
Yeah,
you know, Hollywood voters are no different from anybody else. Critics try to do that. We don't always succeed, but the Academy Awards don't really reflect. They reflect sentiment of. The Academy, they reflect how people feel about the actor themselves.
Yeah,
I mean, Joaquin's going to go up there and give his mumbly, rambly speech, and be like, I don't really want to be
an actor. What he's talking about.
I don't want to get paid anymore for this.
Yeah. You know, and he's because he's got that whole I'm a tortured actor shtick.
Yeah.
But I mean, whatever. Or Brad Pitt's going to go up there and be like, hey, man, it's a hell of a good time. And people are going to love that, right?
Yeah.
And he's Brad Pitt's going to be happens. Like, you know, make some jokes about, you know, I got to pay 17.
And Jennifer Aniston's he's like, hand he's a, the Oscars. I got
look at my life. I turned down Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah. I got 17 kids from Malawi and Indonesia who are going to really appreciate this Academy Award.
Yeah. Will they make her oh my presenter God. For his for
well
his
they
Oscar?
Both won they both won at the SAG Awards
and they had a moment
and they were
yes
like,
I saw
the coverage. Tabloid started saying maybe they're getting back together
somebody did either the Onion AV Club or one of those Slate or one of those people did an article that was hilarious like breaking down every minute of their interaction like we must record this moment for history. This is something happened between the two of them. We do not know. We cannot speculate. There was some moment you know, they just was really hilarious the way they broke it down.
No, I mean 90% of it was I'd still f you too. You know? I mean
it's like it's a weird thing. I mean I don't know if
it's got to be difficult to be dating like whoever's married to Jennifer Aniston now. That's got to be weird to be at the Oscars with her and her ex is the greatest
hard to compete with Brad Pitt
of all time. Yeah. And you're like, hey, I'm a producer for
the other thing was
you know
the other thing is you can't compete with that.
No,
no,
you gotta just sit back and go, look,
look, your
ex-husband's awesome. Can I f him too?
Hey.
I'm glad you dropped an F-bomb. I thought I was the only one today.
Oh, I did a couple. Once you ride this big cannoli, I mean, everything else is just going to be a bonbon.
Exactly.
I mean,
it's
going to
be a bonbon.
Yeah. Once you take a ride on the Salvatore Express, I mean, you know, everything else is going to feel like local traffic. I mean, you know, you got to really... I wouldn't want to follow this guy.
Are you saying I can get Jennifer Aniston?
I wouldn't go that far.
But let's put it out there.
You have pulled above your station before. I have seen it happen. You've shocked me with some of the...
I've outkicked my coverage.
You have, really.
We all have. So, well, getting to the movies.
But anyway, it's really weird. Brad Pitt will win because they want to celebrate him and his stardom.
Oh, he's going to win.
And Joaquin Phoenix will win because they want to look serious.
Yes, exactly.
And there's different... things that that fuel all of this.
Uh-huh.
They want to be like, well, this is really serious, heavy acting.
Yeah.
And then Brad Pitt basically plays Brad Pitt in the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Uh-huh.
Not that I want to get too far into it, but what do you think about the there wasn't many minorities this year in the Oscars? Is that? It seems
are we
going to
do the Oscars so white thing again?
Well, it popped up this year because there really isn't a lot.
It's so weird because... one of my favorite movies of the year, probably my second favorite movie of the year, is The Farewell, which is Awkwafina, whose real name is Nora Lum, but her rap name is Awkwafina. AWK anyway.
Yeah.
But she won the Golden Globe because the Golden Globes has an extra category. Golden Globes has a category for best performance in a comedy or musical.
Mm.
So Taron Egerton from Rocket Man, who I thought was great.
Yeah.
He won for that, and she won in Best Comedy Actress.
And what was that? I've only seen
The Farewell is a great movie, worth really checking out. It's basically the story is it's a Chinese family. The part of them live in America. Awkwafina and her parents and her cousin or whatever live in New York, and they find out her grandmother has cancer, but they don't tell her.
Oh, okay.
They don't tell her because that's the custom. The Chinese custom is that you don't burden the person who's dying with knowing they're dying.
Wow.
Okay.
And you're supposed to take it on. And she doesn't agree with that because she's Americanized. And so they go back to China. They stage a fake wedding for grandma's benefit so everybody can go back and be with her. And it's just a beautiful movie. It's an amazing movie. And it's funny. Oh. And it's all about family. And the whole wedding is funny with the whole the poor kid who's stuck having to get married to make grandma happy.
Is there a nude scene? Is there any skin being
shown? Is there a nude scene? Yeah, grandma whips him out. But anyway, it's a beautiful movie. It's a beautiful, and you don't have to be like, you recognize your own family in this.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Got it.
And
no,
in particularly
cool.
with the food,
yeah.
you know, your family with the cooking and all yeah. the seven fishes and the whole thing.
Yeah.
This is about the Chinese
okay.
cooking and how you make, and they're fighting over how you make the dumplings and all this stuff.
Yeah.
It's a great, great movie. That should have gotten nominated. And the okay. director, Lulu Wang, should have gotten nominated.
Got it. Okay.
And they did great at the Golden Globes, and then it gets squeezed out. And so it's a numbers game. You can't get everybody involved. They expanded the categories to 10, which has been great in at least getting nominations for films.
Hmm.
And all these nominations, by the way, equal money.
Oh, yeah.
These double your box office. They yep. put the movies back out.
Yeah.
Something like Joker made a fortune and yeah. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood made a bunch of money on their own. But
now
all
they're going to get seen
what's
again
the
now
bump?
After
like
tomorrow.
30%, I heard
after
something
tomorrow,
like that.
After,
it's worth
after
they
Oscars
win.
Yeah, it's something like $10 million minimum for
wow.
like a nomination
okay.
will bump
wow.
up your box office. Okay. So something like Judy, which didn't get seen at all,
yeah.
will get rentals.
Three more people will see it.
Yeah, but Jojo Rabbit got put back in the theaters.
Yeah.
They'll put it back out. You can do these packages like AMC. I think people today are probably watching all of them.
Yeah.
You can watch all the best picture nominees. So it is big business, the Oscars. Whether you think they're silly or not, they're big business. All right, what a final category.
Well, so drum roll, please. We're going to have Corey Hall here end the show on his pick for the best picture for
yes.
the Oscars. It's either Ford versus Ferrari, The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, Joker, Little Women, Marriage Story, 1917, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, or Parasite. Drum roll, Corey Hall will give your... I tell you what, we'll do Corey last. What is your pick for the Oscar movie?
My pick is the second in a three-movie a series, 1917. We got the prequel that will come out next year, and then the sequel, 1918.
I'm
thinking
that. And then the other sequel, 1923, where there's just a bunch of guys sitting in the VFW.
Yeah. Drinking 50-cent beers.
Yeah. Boy, remember when we kicked Kaiser Bill in the ass? Right.
What is the critics' pick for the best?
I believe that the winner will be 1917.
1917, okay. There it is.
I think it's the safest pick.
Yeah.
I think nobody can really argue with it in terms of thematically, technically. It's obviously a beautiful, impressive movie. I think some people have said, well, it's not really emotional enough because it's really more technical. It's about this war, kind of like Dunkirk. But I think this movie has a huge emotional payoff.
Mm.
You've seen it. It's just that it's British officers.
Mm.
You know, it's stiff upper lip people
yes.
who can't show their feelings. But there's a huge emotional payoff in this movie. I think it's the safest pick that they can go, this is a great movie. Everyone can enjoy
it
this. It's
all
not
the boxes.
Have,
it checks
said.
All the boxes for an Oscar winner. There you have it.
I think Parasite will get the best foreign
as
film,
it should.
And it's amazing they nominated it for both. And Parasite's an incredible movie.
Yeah, I liked it.
It's an amazing movie, but I don't think they can split it. And I think a lot of the voters are not going to go. It's a Korean movie. They're not going to reward. You know what I mean? It'll get
yeah.
the best. They can safely give it best
it's
foreign
still
film.
Still Hollywood.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's going to be an American
It's Hollywood,
movie.
And that's why Brad Pitt's going to win an Oscar, because it's Hollywood.
Correct.
He sells tickets. He keeps them all in business.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know?
Got to do it. Well hey.
let me ask you a question, Sal.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask this of Corey, too. So we're all picking 1917 to win it. Which movie of the also-rans could win it where you would say, okay, I could see that?
Probably Parasite or Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Okay.
The Irishman, I don't know if that could be a best picture. I don't know.
Yeah,
it
it's
kind
of lost its luster since
came
out.
Ford versus Ferrari is a fun movie that I think everybody, I don't think anybody disliked it. I think everybody
no, it was great.
Liked it.
A lot of fun.
And it's a very entertaining Hollywood, it's an old-fashioned Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
You get people to root for and it's fun.
Yep.
Well, I think in another year it would have done better.
Sure.
This year, though, when you got like really political,
powerful
movies.
Yeah.
It's going to get washed over. So
yeah.
1917, I think, is the biggest
okay.
law. It's the easiest one. Because Jojo Rabbit, again, they're going to go, they got Hitler doing shtick.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going
to. What's his name? Fifi Nefertiri, the director.
Fifi Nefertiri.
I mean, it's so inventive.
By the way,
I love the movie. But
Taika Waititi, who is, by the way, talk about a Puerto Rican Jew.
Yeah.
He's a Maori Jew.
Is that right?
Jeez.
Yeah.
Okay.
You talk about never being able to get that little license plate for your bike. There's no Taika.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no. You're no never Taika. Gonna get those. You know, you might find a Nate, but you're not gonna get. You know.
Oh, that's funny.
You'll right. find an arm brewster before you'll find a Taiki.
What an arm brewster.
Did you have that problem? You couldn't get the you know this. There were no Salvatore.
That's right.
Signs.
All those name stuff I never wore. I never looked for mine. You know, they're not going to have Salvatore Sabatino.
They had Bob. Really
they had, but they were always out of them.
Yeah, they were always out of them. I always remember my friend hung out with a guy named Mike, and so he's like, "Oh, they always got my name, of course."
The only way, you'd see your name on a license plate is if somebody slipped a guy at Rikers $20 to make tap went out for you. Yeah.
Well, this has been a great episode,
this has been great.
Sally.
Corey, who's been on a couple of times. Corey. We always our episodes always get spiked up for when Corey's on. So
yeah.
I don't know who's listening to you out there, but you've got a following. So
somebody.
Somebody's listening. But no, Corey, I always love having you on. You got anything coming up? Anything you want to promote?
No, it's all over from here.
Are you seeing any movies next week? Like, are you seeing anything that don't have access to? Anything that pops up in your head that you're going to be seeing?
Next week is Downhill with Will Ferrell and Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, I've already seen it.
It's a February movie. Oh, you saw it. What did you think?
I kind of liked it, but it's a little dry. People are going to not be. They're going to expect more of like, "Hey, Will Ferrell, fall down this hill."
Yeah,
you know. And it's like
is he being serious or something?
It's a comedy, but it's like a slowly eroding marriage. They go on this ski vacation that goes disastrously wrong.
Okay,
and it's going to be a tough sell for people. Yeah, February movies, man. This is the lean season. After you get all these Oscar movies, everybody's excited. Then they're like, "Hey, let's slip some garbage past you." You know,
yeah. Legally Blonde 4.
Oh God, yeah. Harley Quinn, The Birds of Prey.
Well, it's getting great reviews, but who the hell wants to see it?
Well, this is what I said in my review.
Who was calling for this movie?
I said that I don't understand the character really. Why she's like. I mean, Margot Robbie's gorgeous, and everybody likes. Yeah, you know, she's a good actress.
Certifiably insane as this character.
Yeah,
right?
it's a good time to be a murder clown. I think that's really a popular. And I said Harley Quinn is what every juggalette imagines. She's the platonic ideal of the juggalette. When they're taking a selfie, they think they look like her, but instead they look like a fat tub of guts from Sterling Heights. So, I mean,
fat tub of guts.
You know what I mean? These girls like dress up and take a selfie and they think they look like Margot Robbie, but they look like Fatty Arbuckle is what they end up looking like. So
this is post-conviction
Fatty Arbuckle.
No, it's good. Well, it's always fun.
Well, I'm glad we got 3 minutes of usable audio out of this.
What's going on with you, Bob? Anything going on? Anything you got? Anything coming up?
I'm happy to report. I don't know how the hell this happened.
Sales
the new album
good
came out.
Yeah.
Okay. For some reason, it hit number 4 on the iTunes charts.
All right.
I was, Maria Bamford was number 1, and then 2 Jim Gaffigan CDs are ahead of me. And then, and I'm not kidding you, 3 more Jim Gaffigan CDs below me, and bringing up the rear, Gabriel Iglesias. I'm not fat, I'm fluffy.
Okay,
so I think it only held number 4 for like 2 days. But
so Jim Gaffigan's albums were Thoughts on Baloney.
Yeah.
Did I mention Hot Pockets?
Yes. Did I mention Hot Pockets?
What's the deal with cheese corn?
Yeah,
I mean, all these great albums by Jim Gaffigan.
Dude, well, if you look at the iTunes chart, he dominates. He's got 6 or 7 of the top.
Yeah, but
10.
That poor guy, he was on Joe Rogan, and he said literally people shout out Hot Pockets. He has to do that.
He's going to have to do that joke forever. No, it's like Ray J. Johnson. I mean, it's like Billy Saluga had to do that. You could call me Ray.
Yeah.
Or you could call me. I wanted to throw one more obscure 70s reference
that's
in.
Okay.
All right. Before this.
Or
show.
Bob Nelson doing the football.
Bob
thing.
Nelson has to. Yeah, there's
he's got to do it.
You get trapped doing these bits. I don't have any signature bit, so I'm good about that.
Yeah. I'm just going to do hacky stuff the rest of my life and nobody's going to hear it. That's great, man. Well, hey, good. Hey, thanks for stopping by. Oh, and shout out again to
how about you, Sal? What's going
and
on?
Franks. Let's shout out to Musso and Frank's if you're in the LA area or you know, just go. It's the most famous steakhouse.
It's definitely
LA.
A landmark of LA.
Yeah, so kudos to them, man, and their 100-year history.
Now, what else is going on? You
and then I'm at the Kenosha Comedy Club at the end of the month. I've got a new CD
great
coming
spot.
Out.
Yeah.
I'm going to be at the Castle in April, and I'm going to be out west doing some casinos in May at saldemiller.com. Check it out.
So. Yeah, man. All right. Look how social we are.
We are very social.
On the Sal and Bob Show.
At Bob the Suit, Sally D08. What's your Twitter handle?
At Corey Hall Comic.
At Corey Hall Comic. Take a look at some of his reviews and his Twitter jokes. Nate Armbruster, our great producer. Round of applause
thank you,
for him.
Yes.
And his dog that was in studio today. And his
Murray!
Girlfriend. And we wish you everybody a happy week. Happy February. And we'll see you next week, or you'll hear from us next week on the Sal and Bob
podcast. All right,
what's
the betting line on the XFL? Do we have
the XFL?
Do you have
retire.
It's starting today.
Oh, it is starting
today? The Seattle Dragons versus
God,
the
gave me something else
DC
to bet on.
Renegades. Are on, yeah.
I didn't, yeah, the Dragons. The
I don't know one player, but I'll bet it. no.
We can't quit on the Sal and Bob Show.
I got so desperate one year. I bet Canadian football. I bet Saskatchewan -7 against Ottawa. I didn't know one player. $500 on it.
I went all in on the Alouettes. The Blue Bombers and the Alouettes. Oh,
the Alouettes. That's a real team, people. All right. Well, this has been fun, guys.
Yeah, it's been fun, man. Thanks for listening.
Corey
Hall, thank you
guys
very much. The Sal and Bob Show. We'll see you guys next week. Good night.